Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 288 of the Roguecast, recorded February 25th, 2020. Parents got busy in that coal mining town.
Okay, so we're going to get to a pretty big news item regarding DC Comics.
Right.
And we're not going to start there. We're going to close out the early segment. So I'm just gonna jump right into news. Like there's nothing.
We're talking about Batman's dong, right?
We're talking about Batman's dong. I'm just talking about Batman's dong.
Then I can dig it. News.
So yeah, there was a couple little things. One of the really notable ones is that apparently there's a Diablo animated series in the works at Netflix.
Okay.
And the guy who's working on it also said that he's made a deal to do an Overwatch animated series at Netflix.
Huh.
Now, that has not been confirmed. I think the Diablo is mostly confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
But Overwatch, it would be... Diablo I'm interested in. Like, maybe that'll be fun in the Castlevania vein. But Overwatch, if they finally do an Overwatch, like, anime series, that'd be fantastic.
I know, by the way, Diablo has been huge in its time.
Sure.
But I was kind of thinking Diablo was a little past its prime to kind of be pushing a movie or animated thing.
Didn't Diablo 3 come out relative to Diablo 4 or something? I don't know. I feel like Diablo's always out
probably
there.
Yeah.
I don't know. If my friends aren't immediately talking about it, I don't know it.
Well, what's interesting is the Overwatch timing isn't great either. Like, I feel like Overwatch is on its decline as they get into Overwatch 2.
Right, but I still feel like that has sort of more heat as a property than Diablo does presently.
The issue is it's going to be an anime series and not a, like, CGI, which is kind of too bad.
Yeah, that's kind of how they created their visual mark, was with the CG
but
movies.
I guess those little trailer things take forever to make, and you can't
no doubt
series that way. But anyway.
But that's kind of cool, you know, a fantasy animated series and or a Overwatch sci-fi superhero-ish thing would be pretty cool.
I'm down for both.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier has cast Carl Lumley in an unknown role.
Yeah, I was just excited for this because I like Carl Lumley.
He improves everything he's in. Even the things he starred, like Mantis is not great, don't get me wrong. nobody remembers Mantis.
That is a deep cut.
Right?
You know Russell does.
Russell Sinclair
would like to tell us that you
drop
definitely...
us an email. I remember Mantis.
Russell watched Mantis in the 90s,
yeah,
I bet.
Like the rest of us. I didn't watch Mantis.
I wasn't a fool.
I didn't hate Mantis, actually. I remember liking it, but I know it wasn't good.
Listen, in the 90s, we didn't have a lot of choices.
No.
But there were lots of little superhero things percolating, like The Flash and Lois and Clark and stuff like that. But sometimes you just had to kind of accept what was on your plate and eat it.
And eat it.
Eat the Mantis.
But Carl Emley was recently in Dr. Sleep.
He was
great.
Right. I think he's like sort of almost the little secret weapon in that movie. He's so good playing the role of Scatman Crothers in the afterlife.
Yes.
Also, his work on Alias.
I was going to say, that's the big thing.
He was like Cindy Bristow's handler on Alias.
Well, he was her partner.
Yeah, his partner, not handler.
I think he became her handler later.
Yeah.
I thought he was her handler early on.
No, he was her partner because they went on missions together, and he thought he was working for the CIA.
Oh, yeah, no, I guess I sort of say handler probably because he was sort of... But he was more behind the scenes, and she would go in and break into places,
he was like
right?
the senior agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was the Kung Fu agent.
The Witcher, speaking of Netflix, has cast 7 new characters for, I guess season 2?
Yeah.
I guess that's
which
happening.
Which is already starting filming,
and
I think.
I don't know much about these characters. I know that, the guy who played Tormund, Christopher Heavew.
Talking about
there?
On Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Yep.
Let me, I'm gonna just say the names of the Witcher characters, even though I don't know them.
Okay.
There's, Vlaktor.
It's actually Verena, but you're close.
Arcanox the Meek.
Francesca.
And the wizard Omgar.
Got nothing there.
Okay.
But I am going to give you the names now.
Okay, hit it.
Cohen, Verena, Lambert, Eskel, Lydia, Nivellen, and Francesca.
Okay. These sound a little bit more like European type names than... than my made-up D&D names.
So, Cohen, Eskel, and Lambert are all witchers. Nivellen is a cursed man who lives in the woods. I feel that. Verena is a Bruxa, or vampire, involved with Nivellen. Lydia is Vilgefortz's assistant. And Francesca is a sorceress and elven queen. Wow.
So they're going to the elves stuff. I mean, this all sounds fun.
So, I guess... Are these characters that, Nick, have you read any of the books or done any of the games?
I bought the game and I haven't sat down and played with it.
All right. I was wondering if these are characters that are stepping over from there that people who follow those are going to be like, oh, thank God they brought in Vorskar the Wizard.
It sounds like, was that one of the names? I don't think that was one of the names.
No, I'm still making them up.
It sounds like they are existent, extant characters, if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't finish season one. I very much doubt I'll watch season two. But for those of you who enjoyed it, there you go.
If they do bring in Khoragastar the elf, then I will watch it.
Okay. So if they bring in this character you just invented.
And if you really enjoyed Witcher, I'm sorry for these two dolts.
You're the dolt.
Fans who enjoy Witcher are the dolts.
No. It's neat, and anybody who likes it is welcome to enjoy it. I've watched far shittier fantasy things, so I really will not judge you.
Except that you think that the MTV series Shannara is better.
It is better. Better in all ways.
I watched
better, like, special effects, much deeper character.
See, this is all I want to do is trick Dave into shit talking The Witcher by talking up.
Isn't that the one that had Frank Grillo?
You tricked me.
As like the, or no?
Had what?
It wasn't Frank Grillo.
It's the guy who plays Deathstroke.
Manu Bennett.
Yeah, Manu Bennett.
That guy. He always sounds to me like he's got like a mouthful of soup. there's something about how he talks. Now I like him. He's always got a great physical presence.
Sure.
But
didn't that dude get in a fight at Wizard World Austin or something?
Yes, he did.
Oh yeah. Is he one of these like tough guys who's like an a-hole tough guy? Maybe
he might be.
Yeah.
A tough guy.
But you know, Austin may just bring out the fighting people. What's his name? Jarek Padalecki. Got in a big fight at his bar.
It's true.
Like Russell Crowe or Dennis Quaid got into a fight too.
Is it because Austin is filled with annoying hipsters?
It's possible.
And these a guy who's like basically Deathstroke just can't help
it. He just can't take it.
He's like, I'm gonna have to murder you. That's just all there is to it.
By the way, Nick, Russell Crowe got in a fight there is not defining of anything. Like, you can even say, oh, that's where Russell Crowe threw a phone at someone. You're like, you're gonna have to be more specific.
True.
Actually a 78% chance that he's throwing a phone at someone right now.
That's true. The big news. Yeah. Surprising news. Danny Dio has exited DC Comics, and it sounds like maybe not entirely of his own volition.
Right. And to read a little bit about it behind the scenes, I think we were kind of both going, Randy, from the... was it Heidi McDonald?
Heidi McDonald wrote an article.
Longtime industry insider.
And who also, by the way, worked with Dan DiDio at some point.
She wrote a pretty good, thoughtful piece on it. And
sort of covered the history of DiDio at DC.
And apparently
then...
he's been, like, among other things, like on the verge of being fired for years and years.
Yes. It sounds like Dan DiDio, for all that, a lot of creators love him. And in my Facebook feed, I can watch all these creators, Christos Gage, and a lot of these guys who just love him.
Yeah.
And they all have nice things to say about him. But... almost all of them also say, I didn't always agree with him creatively, but what a great guy.
Yeah.
And I think that he may have done a little too much creative micromanaging and tinkering, and finally some of the people at DC were like, look, you gotta let us tell stories.
Right. And in a weird way, it reminds me, of course, of what people said about Jim Shooter, who had a very famous tenure at Marvel in the 80s, which presided over some of the biggest creative booms of the era, whether it was like Walt Simonson on Thor, John Byrne on FF, Frank Miller on Daredevil. These are big, huge times. But a lot of them behind the scenes were like, it was terrible.
Yeah.
He was a monster. He had like crazy editorial edicts. We hated him.
But Jim Shooter produced some of the best comics ever produced, and Dan Dio made DC unreadable to me.
To you, yes. But but a fair number of people have had some good times.
Yeah.
It does seem like, I remember, I listened to an interview with DiDio years ago on Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman podcast.
Yep.
And given that I mostly do not like his, certainly none of the stuff he's actually written, DiDio.
Oh, yeah.
But also a lot of his editorial tenure, like at DC, has not been for me.
Right.
So of course I was disappointed to hear that he seemed like a nice guy.
Yeah, you want to just hate him, right?
Yeah, yeah. And instead he was an enthusiastic guy who clearly knew his DC, especially like Silver Age and I think Bronze Age were like his eras, and he seemed almost boyishly enthusiastic for it. But I'm sure, he was boyishly enthusiastic for his various edicts to these writers, and then I'm sure he turned into a grumpy, mean man to get him in line for it.
Yeah.
So
the question is, what happens now?
Right. So Jim Lee is presently, he was the co-publisher, right?
Yeah.
With DiDio. So Jim Lee is just at the moment is the sole publisher.
Yeah, and Bob Harris remains editor in chief.
Right.
But they're definitely going
to
bring...
No one's really expecting that status quo to remain, right?
No. DiDio had a large footprint in DC, and there's no doubt they're going to do something to change his role.
Well, yeah, what they said was that... or what Heidi said in her write-up was that part of the reason he wasn't fired before for various kind of seeming missteps was because he was also viewed as, like, an essential part. Like, yeah. He was, like, too big to fire.
Yeah.
Like, we need him. He's got all these plates in the air. We got to keep him going.
Yep.
Then something must have just pushed him over.
I think it was fifth generation.
I don't think that name is known to most people.
So this has been rumored for a while. That basically, DC was going to do another sort of reboot where they were going to reveal that there have been five generations of DC superheroes going back to, like, World War II, and that the new fifth generation was going to be new characters for Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, like, they were basically going to create new characters that were, like, just like the Silver Age to Golden Age thing they did, or Golden Age to Silver Age, where suddenly, you know, Alan Scott wasn't Green Lantern anymore, there was a new Green Lantern.
Right.
They were going to do a new, more diverse, like, ultimized, like, DC Universe, which, by the way, I don't think is a terrible idea.
But this would be actually separate from their mainstream continuity?
This would be the mainstream continuity.
So this would be as big a change as when the Silver Age happened.
Yeah.
But, like, suddenly, like... Man, I can't even imagine them doing that because Batman and stuff like that, they're too powerful as an IP.
I think that they were probably going to do, like, flashback stories and stuff. But it's a ballsy move, and we don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it sounds like it might have been a little too much for the shareholders or the higher-ups who are like, you cannot replace our biggest moneymakers with different characters.
Do we think that project is definitely shelved, or, like, do you think it'll morph?
Here's the interesting thing. It's still a Free Comic Day offering.
Right.
And it's still in the new previews.
What is the actual Free Comic Book Day offering? What's it called?
It's like the number zero. It's like fifth generation number
zero. Oh, that's actually what it's called, huh?
Yeah. So it's interesting, but it sounds like basically that was the last straw. They were like, please stop rebooting, and this is too out there. And here's the thing. Under the right creative team, I absolutely, just like New 52 or Rebirth, I think this could be a thing that DC needs. A sort of restreamlining, put all the toys back in line. But every time they've done these reboots, they have the same people doing it, and they fuck it up again.
Yeah, it's like, if you don't have different creators, then you're going to get the same results, only slightly different.
Yeah, and I think that's why the sales have flagged on Rebirth. That's why they did on New 52. And
here's a quick question. How long has DiDio been in charge? 2000?
That is an excellent question that I do not know the answer to off the top of my head.
I feel like I've been talking about him since, I would bet, at least 2005, but maybe he's been around even earlier.
It's been a long time. I'm looking at the article now because I want to find it. Because I'm sure that in Heidi's write-up she talked
Nick,
about it.
Nick, what's your sense on this? Are you happy or sad to see DiDio go?
I'm sort of indifferent. I mean, I especially didn't like his crusades against certain characters.
Right, he was
Wally
known...
Wally West and Nightwing.
Yeah.
Especially Wally West recently. They're just like, let's change him and make him a god and give him Dr. Manhattan's powers and merge him with Metron. And I'm like...
Don't forget the murderer.
And then he murdered people. And I'm just like... It definitely seems like his word was law. Because I've read, you know, interviews with, like, Tom King saying that his Heroes in Crisis... He was basically given the story and given the characters and was, like, told to write it.
That's weird, because Tom King doesn't seem like a guy who would be told to write anything.
But I bet Tom King was the guy who got fired off of Batman.
I mean, he's still working with DC. He's doing his new
like,
Adam
they're
Strange.
All freelancers, right? Nobody has to take a job there.
No. He's obviously not unhappy about it, but I'm sure he was not thrilled to have his project taken out from under him.
Yeah.
Right.
So DiDio has been there since at least 2004, because Identity Crisis was one of the big things under his watch.
Okay.
Identity Crisis, of course, is the first thing that started to put me off DC forever.
Right. It was,
And then they did Infinite Crisis and 52 and Countdown to Final Crisis and Final Crisis, which was in 2008, which was not the Final Crisis. It turns out that, there was Flashpoint.
It is kind of funny that DC as a company would be defined by an ongoing series of crises.
So apparently, Dark Knight's Metal was originally going to be called Dark Crisis.
Right, I saw that.
Heroes in Crisis, of course, did come out, but it seems like DiDio is a guy who liked the sort of death dismemberment stuff and liked that kind of thing.
Which is interesting, because I always felt like Geoff Johns had that kind of bent to him.
He does.
And I know that Johns and DiDio clashed. Like, they had big blow-ups.
They did, but they also they got along on some things, because they, like, DiDio liked to do it because he thought it was grown up and adult, and I think Johns did it for sort of different reasons.
I know Johns liked to do the, kind of the grimdark stuff as kind of to pave the way for sort of what he saw as classic heroism.
Yeah.
And I don't know if DiDio, you know, felt like that was outmoded, or whether they were, it was just the particulars they disagreed right. on at times.
Yeah. But DiDio did spearhead New 52, which was a really ballsy thing for DC to do.
And it actually was pretty...
It was very successful for a little while, but yeah. I think ultimately in the long term, it sealed his doom. Like, that was a... Starting the notion of, well, just we'll just restart everything.
Yeah.
But not really everything, because the continuity is sort of still there, and the sort of half-assedness of it, I think, is part yeah. of the problem.
I mean, arguably, like, I got on board DC when they did the original Crisis on Infinite Earths. When that wrapped and everything relaunched, I started reading from there. And they were kind of dodgy with their history then, too. They were like, well, it's both a continue, like, everything you read before... a lot of it still happened.
Yeah.
It's only things like Superboy stories were wiped out and certain other ones.
It's the pick and choose model.
Yeah. But it's interesting that their most famous one, I guess outside of the one that was launched the Silver Age, which was really a whole scale rethink where the characters like Alan Scott and Hal Jordan were like nowhere near the same character.
Yeah.
It was just a complete rethink. But they've been, in a way, half-assing it ever since they started doing any Crisis at all, even the one that got me on board,
yeah,
in like 86,
yeah,
they don't seem to be able to commit to like one universe, because there's always somebody who's like, I miss Earth X, you know,
yeah.
Or Earth 2.
I think honestly the best thing to compare him to is Bill Gemmis over at Marvel.
Yeah,
kind of very loud, very much very enthusiastic. Occasionally just kind of a dingus who didn't understand comics.
Yeah.
But also someone who did understand comics at this deep level, who probably needed the right person to bounce... Like, Gemmis was fortunate to have Quesada to bounce off of.
Right.
The two of them balanced each other really well. And I think that that's what that worked. DiDio didn't have anyone else. Like, Bob Harris was basically a yes man at this point. He was probably just glad to be working in comics again. And Jim Lee was always a, like, art guy.
Yeah.
I feel like he didn't have... someone who is his equal in terms of, like, in the power structure or whatever. Like, Geoff Johns could have been that, but it's not like they couldn't work together well enough.
I know they also said Jim Lee's basically... He's been off to overseeing, like, the video game, like,
yeah.
DC Online and other stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he wasn't that actively involved in the comic stuff going on there.
I saw a joking article about Jim Lee wakes from a 4-day nap to find that he's the sole editor of DC Comics.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I saw that, too. I think it was bleeding cool.
I think it was. Every once in a while, though.
Yeah,
I'll put out something funny.
That's pretty funny. I don't know where it goes from here. But the optimistic part of me wants to think that someone's going to come in who is going to do things differently. Like, I would really like to have someone who is going to...
You want him to fire Bendis, don't you?
I do want him to fire Bendis, but that's always true. I think the trick is this. I would like...
You want somebody with vision?
I would like someone to have a vision. I would like someone to come in and do DC Comics that make me fall in love with these characters again. The problem is, I think if you do that... you may be alienating an audience that is actually reading DC Comics right now.
Right.
And I don't know that getting me and fans like me back is worth losing the fans you have.
Well, you know, the Marvel movie model is often a good one to look to, because that actually found a way to walk between those worlds where it pleased both longtime Marvel fans and people who had never read a Marvel comic in their life.
Yeah.
It would be nice if DC could find somebody who could kind of try for that with the comics in the same way Marvel has with the movies.
Have there been no names bandied about?
Nothing's been really floated yet. I think Blading Cool have one person that they floated, but I don't trust them to know anything, and it wasn't a name I knew.
Hmm.
Like,
I believe Randy wrote Tom Taylor on a note, and he tucked it under a door.
I did. I actually put it on my hope chest. And, yeah, that is the thing. Like,
they find a note under the door that says Tom Taylor is super neat.
I think putting Tom Taylor in charge of the DC Universe would not be the worst decision.
But that takes away from his writing.
I know, but...
And I don't...
But if he fixed all of DC and brought about a new age of miracles?
If he did the same thing DiDio did and was, like, micromanaging a little bit, not too much, not as much as DiDio did obnoxiously, but if he was the guy basically saying, no, this is how you do Oliver Queen. And this is how you do Harley Quinn. And the characters that he is so good at, which is most of them, I would be willing to give up his writing.
I have nightmare fuel for you. What if it's Bendis?
I don't see it. I mean, you and I have talked about this, Nick, off mic before, that Bendis, whoever hired Bendis is probably sweating their job bad.
Like, it doesn't feel like they got their money's worth.
They definitely not get, like, none of his books have hit.
Yeah.
And, like, the thing, like, Superman's Identity was a big old flop.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they really did not get their money's worth out of it. And Legion of Superheroes is not taking off. His Superman stuff is not going that well.
I feel like what may end up being one of his bigger contributions would be Young Justice and some of the new characters, associated with it. And even those, we'll have to see if they stand the test of time.
And even those are niche, like more so than Hill House, which I think is even more of a
right. But I could see like if they ever do something with that the new character of his, Naomi.
Sure.
That you know that she could end up taking off the same way, like say it took a little while for Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, to take off.
I think you're right. I think Naomi may be his big contribution.
But what? Yeah, let's see.
But I don't see them promoting him to be editor in chief. Tom Taylor, of course, would be great. People have talked about, and this always comes up online. Of course, I know a lot of old school fanboys, so they're like, put Mark Waid in charge, and I'm like, Mark Waid is great, but he has been editor in chief of like three companies now.
Yeah.
And he's just got promoted to editor-in-chief of Humanoids, and it never works. And Mark Waid was an editor. He's got editorial skills, but I don't think he's the right guy for this time.
Incidentally, in case anybody listening has seen this, there's a completely invented clickbait rumor from that Cosmic Book News.
Don't go to
those scumbag guys. And their rumor is that Marvel is going to buy DC.
Yes, I've seen that.
They just will put the craziest stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, do not take that with any degree of seriousness.
So I'll say this. One of the reasons that the DC Marvel stuff stopped happening was Paul Levitz and Dana Dio pissed off Joe Quesada and Bill Gemmis. None of those guys are in charge anymore.
So there could be handshakes?
It is possible now that maybe they could find a way for them to work together.
I mean, the big problem, of course, is that the movies have made the stakes so much higher.
Yeah.
They don't know. Marvel probably doesn't want DC to draft off of their powerful movie energy.
It's true.
And so they're like, we have nothing to... all we can do is give them extra juice.
And also, Donny Cates already killed them in Thor.
I still will say, Deadpool, Harley Quinn... You guys are leaving so much money on the table.
You know, it's comic book money.
I know.
That's like thousands of dollars. And they're like, pal, we work in Hollywood money. We're talking tens of millions.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And you're like, but thousands.
But the thousands. And I don't even want it.
The dank.
I don't even want that crossover, but I feel like for comics it'd be huge.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys have any names you can think of? People you think would be
I'm really bad with editors.
Paul Pope.
And make God.
Make it crazy.
What I'd like is for them to hire Mark Chiarello back.
As art director?
Yeah. Because they lost something when they lost him. Like, I definitely feel like their art lost a step.
Let's go crazy. Let's say DC does a mea culpa, throws a bunch of money at Alan Moore.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I
You know, the closest I can think to to a picture of what that would look like would be his Twilight of the Superheroes project, which the notes and stuff for that are all online. But he's actually such a different person than he was like 40 years ago when he wrote that. I mean, first of all, he'd have nothing to do with DC.
He'd never do it.
He would never.
But weirdly, I think he might be like almost like... They should be written for children and not adults.
But that does bring up something. Some people suggested Grant Morrison. And I think Grant Morrison would be a huge mistake in that capacity. I think Grant Morrison is a guy,
he's a
showrunner, but...
Yeah, he's a force unto himself. And, like, the fact that so many of his great runs are followed by people who don't know what to do with the pieces he left behind, which I get because he's has such a weird singular style, means that him as, like, running the show... Maybe not a great idea.
Yeah.
It might be like everything would be like Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Yeah.
Which was, in fact, sales wise, Seven Soldiers of Failure.
It's true.
Creativity wise, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if I can think of there's actually no one writer who's like impressing me on so many things right now. The closest I feel like is maybe somebody like Jeff Lemire, who's got a sort of a big picture vibe for and stuff.
Although
like
I don't
Black
know if
Hammer.
He's got any editorial chops.
Yeah, I have no idea. But like, I don't like her writing, but
I don't
actually dislike her writing either.
But she's a pretty good idea person, and she likes a lot. She's good at relationships.
Yeah.
I don't see her getting offered the job or taking the job, but I would like to see, I don't think it's going to happen, but DC could definitely use some different energy, some women or some non-white people running there. I mean, Jim Lee is Asian, so that's good, but they don't have that point of view at the top. And they've had really bad scandals with, like, Eddie Braganza and other people. Like, they've had...
Was Eddie Braganza the one where he was the old Superman editor that was like being creepy to people, and they kind of Catholic Churched it and hit
it? Yeah, they just kind of hit him for a long time.
Hit him away.
I would like to see, and that happens in Marvel too. I mean, it's a bad culture in a lot of ways, but Marvel has a deeper bench of sort of women and people of color in their positions, and I think that DC could use that.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, if he wasn't gone, Dwayne McDuffie is the guy you put in charge of DC, and everything would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
They'd never do it. Dwayne McDuffie spoke truth to power a few times too many for them to ever point to that position.
How about Zack Snyder?
Oh, God.
The comeback kid.
Yes, he comes back from the movies and just ruins the comics.
He's here to give you Pa Kent who leaps into a tornado.
Is there anyone from the DC movies that you think they could bring over?
Like a director or something?
Yeah, any of those guys. I mean, Geoff Johns is the obvious one because he was a movie comics guy, but they're not going to put Geoff Johns in charge. Although, wouldn't that be an amazing fuck you to Dan DiDio? They're like, yeah, now that DiDio's gone, we brought Geoff Johns and put him straight up in charge.
I mean, I could almost see it happening.
I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, no, I don't have any real names to throw into the hat. People should send in their names into the hat.
My guess is we're guessing, and all the fans are guessing at people like, hey, Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, Kurt Busiek.
It's going to be somebody we don't know.
We've never heard of. It's going to be some business guy.
Well, like, I remember when Bill Gemmis came in from Marvel, he came in from trading cards, right? He was, like, from Topps or Fleer or one of those things.
And I almost think that's the best case scenario, is that there's someone out there who's high up in their executive rank who just fucking loves comics and loves these characters, and they think they're getting a bean counter. And instead they get a Jim Shooter or someone like that who really just knows what to do with these characters and puts the right people... And knows the secret of this is to put the right people on them and trust them. That, I think, was DiDio's big failing, is that he wanted to keep his hand in. And that works if you're Jim Shooter. It doesn't work so much for Dan DiDio.
Make sure you get the guys who made the Lego Batman movie.
Oh, yeah, Lord Miller?
Yeah.
You put Lord Miller in charge of DC, something got my attention.
Are they a Quato creation at that point?
They're a Quato creation. Lord Miller and Lee. They have to do like a Mount Rushmore thing.
Yes.
Lord Miller, Lee, and Harris.
Well, this is an interesting idea. I just had to do an internet search.
What people are speculating on?
He is a good editor and a solid writer, but Peter Tomasi.
Oh, man. Tomasi would be good.
I think he's got a handle on DC characters in general.
Yeah.
But I think he's a good editor, too.
He's a great editor. He's the guy who was responsible for The Spectre, for Suicide Squad, for a lot of the stuff that I love.
Oh, that was Peter Tomasi?
Yeah. Hitman, that was Tomasi.
To me, he hasn't been the same since he wrote Route 666.
That's fair.
He was an editor for DC Comics for 14 years.
Yeah. He was an editor for a long, long time, and he ran some of the, like, Ostrander work. I think Hawkworld was his, too.
Is that true? He was an editor for 14 years, and he's written comics for 13 years?
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds about right. Tomasi would be great. I would be very excited about
that. I kind of like that one.
Even though I'm not as big on his writing these days, I know that his writing was stuff that people liked.
And he's got some good editorial instincts and a track record.
He'd probably fire Bendis for what he did to his run. So, I don't know that Tomasi's even at all a DC insider anymore, though. I don't know if he's really there anymore.
I feel like he's writing something.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, he's writing something.
Honestly, part of me just wants to hire Paul Levitz back. I know that won't happen either. It's an exciting thing to see. I think the likely outcome is it's somebody I don't even know, and nothing really changes.
Yeah.
But I think that the big thing that is going to change is that this fifth generation thing they were leading up to was going to be another big reboot, which probably would have been a sales spike and then further decline. And I think they need to get out of that pattern.
Yeah. You know what I'm like to imagine? That DiDio got fired because he never did the three Batmans.
They're like, where's the three Batmans, Dan? Where are they? All right, so that is up for news this week. We'll be back next in a few minutes with comics. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, February 26th, the last week of February.
Which to my mind just puts us closer to our inventory day.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, we're coming up on it. So last week was a really good week for me. There were quite a few things I liked this week as well. In fact, I think Dave, you and I both have number ones.
Yep.
So I'm going to start with Tomorrow, number one, written by Peter Milligan, a Vertigo mainstay.
What's his big thing, Shade the Changing Man?
Yeah.
Beckwin.
And man, there's other stuff he's done. But that's
He wrote Hellblazer.
And then Jesus Hervas, the artist. This is part of the Karen Berger's Burger Books over at Dark Horse. So it is a Vertigo project in a lot of ways. The art on this is a really pretty painted. It reminds me a little bit of like the Gabriel Ba Fabio Moon style, but it's not quite that. I can't quite pinpoint what it reminds me of, but it's really, really nice. The colors are great by James Devlin. But this is a story about a virus, a worldwide virus that basically, this is a little crazy. It's the kind of thing in a Hollywood movie that you would laugh at, but there's a computer expert who's like giving a briefing at the NSC or something like that, and he's like, there's a sophisticated computer virus. It started mutating very fast. I believe that 3 days ago it jumped the species barrier from computer to human.
Okay.
And I'm like...
So it's like a contagious, biologically contagious, yep, computer virus?
And I'm like, I don't think that's a thing.
Yeah.
But you do you. And it is kind of a fun... It reminds me of what Tom Taylor did with Deceased,
mm-hmm,
where the virus was sort of spreading through electronic devices, like you couldn't look at your devices. And so it is a virus that kills in like 20 minutes. It doesn't create zombies or anything. It just kills people.
Mm-hmm.
And we see a variety of characters. We see a young musical prodigy on the spectrum who basically is playing this piece while the virus kills everyone around him. Then he comes out of the piece and it's like everybody's dead. There's a mom and her two kids who are related to the computer expert, and the two kids sort of wind up on their own. There's a soccer team that gets stranded when their bus driver dies, and there is this sort of higher up guy from marketing in some big company. He's clearly like a big important guy. Who is out on a retreat with some other people, and there's no screens or anything when this all goes down. There's also a Russian hacker involved who maybe created the virus. But I'm curious to see where it goes. Like, this is all the opening, you know, 20 minutes of a movie where they show, like, the world turned upside down, the virus killing a bunch of people, and our cast of characters. And it's pretty good at doing that.
Yeah. Who puts this out?
This is Dark Horse Books. Okay. Books.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I enjoyed it, and those of you who like sort of pandemic stuff might give it a look.
I'm gonna take a look. I do like the viral thrillers, whether it's the Andromeda Strain or, was it Contagion? That's the Soderbergh one.
Yep.
We were talking about this earlier.
Yep.
Anything like that is, I've been scared of those since I was a kid, so I'm generally on board them.
Dave, what's your pick?
My pick has decidedly more Ninja Turtles than yours does.
You don't know that. You didn't read this.
I have a sense. this is a mini-series that they're doing that's spinning off of completely off of the events of the current Ninja Turtle series. It's called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Jenica. Jenica, a.k.a. Jenny, has been essentially the lead character, the viewer perspective character for Ninja Turtles after it hit issue 100. She is the person who was a former, Foot Clan soldier who got turned into a turtle when she got a blood transfusion from
one. I thought she was the daughter of Shredder.
She was the daughter of Shredder.
She was, but yeah. She was, that's right. She was, but she was in the Foot Clan.
But the daughter of Shredder is a person.
Yeah.
She's not a monster, Nick.
No, but that's a little bit more important than saying it's just a member of the Foot Clan.
Well, they don't focus on that in this. All they mainly talk about it sounds like almost more her background, like, you know how, like, this is weird, you know how in the Ninja Turtle movie, I forget if it was supposed to be this in the books, you know how, the Foot Clan got recruited from, like, street punks?
Yep, yep.
They make out like she was a street punk in this. Like, I wonder if, like, maybe she didn't know her dad was the Shredder.
Maybe, like Joe Hill, she didn't want to get by in her father's name. She's like, no, I'm not Shredder, I'm Jenica.
I'm Scratcher.
I'm a different kind of thing.
I've really liked her character in that, in the Sophie Campbell comics. And Sophie Campbell, who's been doing Ninja Turtles since issue 100, now three or four issues in, does not do this. This is all from, is it Brom Revel?
Yeah. Somebody? Yeah.
Who dat?
I don't know. The art's really pretty, though.
Yeah, and this is, that is like writing art and even the lettering, apparently. So I assume Brom's a dude. This guy's got all the skills. He's a Renaissance man. You know, that actually is kind of nice lettering, I gotta say. It looks like it's a computer font, but it's like a really nice clean one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so this follows that basic premise that's been going on in the Turtle books, which is to say that there's a section of Manhattan walled off because there was like this sort of explosion of like a sort of gene bomb that mutated everybody who was in like its radius. So they're all walking around and it looks like Zootopia, right? And within that, the turtles, including Jenica, have been like doing protective stuff. And this follows her story. Starts with chasing somebody who's actually stepped outside, who snuck outside the walled area. And she's basically worried that they're going to like get killed by police.
Yep.
And only it turns out that this person is actually going back to get their drumsticks for their band's gig tonight in the Mutant Zone, which I thought was kind of cool. And Jenica herself, as having kind of been like a, honestly, like a kind of a punk rock chick, it seems like, this is like very much up her alley. So in addition to chasing down this rabbit guy, she also bumps into her old boyfriend from when she was human, Casey Jones. You might remember him from wearing a hockey mask and beating up dudes with hockey sticks and being best buddy to the Ninja Turtles.
Oh, is that who that was?
Uh-huh.
I thought he was a random homeless man who wandered in the store.
He had, what are we talking about?
Sorry. Guy with a hockey mask swinging a stick.
Yes.
You think crazy person.
Interestingly, this sort of brings up the thing where... she's staring at this billboard that's like, you know, something about, you know, clearly kind of a scantily clad chick on a billboard that says, make sure you're the only woman he'll ever want. And she's clearly thinking, like, basically Casey left her when she became mutated. And, you know, there's little doubt that this is meant to be a bit of an allegory, metaphor kind of thing for someone who's transitioning. Mm-hmm. Although this was sort of inflicted accidentally upon her and was not a choice. But like the sort of imperfect metaphor of mutants for many different marginalized groups, there's no doubt that that's what's on the mind. And they have a kind of a... It's actually kind of nice. They bump into each other, and it's awkward, but they clearly still have feelings for each other. And he was like, it's great to see you. But it looks like he's running the old gang, the Purple Gang, which was like the gang in the very first issue of Ninja Turtles in 1984.
Oh, I'd forgotten. I saw them turn up, and I'd forgotten it was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of weird to check in on this book, which, A, it's a revamp that started like 10 years ago, but it's still using all the sort of pieces, and to like see what's happened in all that time, and I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, actually. I feel like that's a decent role for him, to have taken over.
Not for too far, but when Casey Jones first showed up, am I crazy? Did he yell something like Kriga Bungalow or something like that?
I believe he said Booga Booga.
He was acting real weird, right?
Yeah.
And was he like, he was deranged. Like, there was something wrong with him.
Yes, he was meant to, I think, be like a kind of, like what an 80s kid thought a cool vigilante would be.
Right.
Which is, I'm going to get like my hockey mask and kind of look a little bit like Jason, and I'm going to kick the crap out of people. And it was meant to be he was a little too dangerous in then.
Yeah.
So that like the turtles fought him at first and stuff like that.
But the new version seems to be much more grounded.
He is. Yeah. He seems like he's a guy who's like more of like maybe a bit of a lovable dope like Hawkeye is.
Yeah.
In fact, if they ever do a crossover, those guys should probably meet.
Yeah.
Hawkeye was a bad guy, too, when he first showed up.
That's true. And he also wore a hockey mask.
I don't remember that.
He played hockey, probably. We never saw it, but it's fair to assume.
Let's see. What else goes on? The concert happens in this. Jenica, a.k.a. Jenny, runs into an ex who they both recognize each other only after a little bit because they're both mutated at this point.
Okay.
And kind of hilariously... At some point, what is it? She's like, what kind of animal are you? And he's like, I think maybe a ferret or a mongoose. I'm not really sure yet. So I guess, you know, like when you just because you transform doesn't mean you know what animal you were mutated into.
Right, yeah.
There's a fun story. There's an emotional arc to it of she's kind of dealing with her past in different ways. There's a neat backup story that shows you how when she was a troubled kid, how Splinter got through to her, and reminded her of like a little rat that she saved when she was doing time in prison. And there's a bit at the end where I can't quite tell, but it shows her like now in the mutant zone where she's like serving, helping out in like a soup kitchen or whatever. and there's a rat that she's serving that reminds, she's, they say, reminds her of someone. Now, I know that she's probably talking about Splinter, who we think is dead at this point, or they presented as dead.
Yes.
But I was like, is it possible that's the actual rat that from when she was little or when she was younger, and now it's mutated into a person and they're buddies?
I guess it depends on where the prison was in conjunction with the zone.
I'm guessing it probably is not. I'm guessing it probably is not one, but it was a sweet little backup story. Anyway, I have been surprised to find myself very on board all the new Ninja Turtle stuff.
You're suddenly the biggest fan there is.
You know, here's the thing is when I like Jenica as the focus, the four brothers are all present in the Ninja Turtle comic, but she's the eyes on or the perspective, yeah. Right? And if she falls out of the picture when Sophie Campbell leaves, then I might drop off the book. Because also Sophie Campbell's art's killing it on that.
Right, yes.
But this was all different writer and artist, and it felt like it was of a piece with that, and I really liked it. So
yeah, I think you're going to have to go back and read the other 100 issues.
No, I peeked back, and I didn't like him. I didn't dislike him.
Well, also the thing is, you don't need to. I feel like Sophie Campbell's is extremely...
I was sort of hoping. I was like, oh, what if I find out I've got a treasure trove of 100 issues to go read?
Nick, I'm trying to trick Dave into reading 100 issues. You're not helping me.
He's not Dan.
But hey, what if those like 3 or 4 issues aren't the really good ones? What if we need to get like 10 issues in?
What if you have to get like 30 issues
in? Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Or what are you, Tom Sawyer?
This is like when we were talking about, I don't know if you were involved in this conversation or not off mic, but it was like, skip the first 2 seasons of this show and then you're going to get to the really, really good stuff. Yeah. It's like, but... yeah, I think we were talking about Star Trek Next Generation.
Right.
Skip the first 3 seasons and then you'll be fine.
Or okay, Babylon 5, which one do you want to slow? It's like 3 episodes. I'll give you the episodes to watch in season 1 so you know. Then you watch season 2, then season 3, then like half of season 4, and then these 2 episodes from season 5. And when you tell people like that, they're like, I'm never watching the show and I hate you.
You know what? This got me thinking. I would read a Ninja Turtles Star Trek crossover.
Oh, yeah.
In which the Turtles were brought into, like, Picard's future or Kirk or any of those people.
I mean, they're doing My Little Pony Transformers. I don't think IDW is shy of crossovers.
They're also doing Transformers Terminator. Yeah.
Have they not done it yet?
I don't know.
Trek people just won't play ball?
Well, TMNT has crossed over with Batman, with Power Rangers.
Yep. Did you see that they're becoming, Turtle Rangers?
That's great.
And that...
I mean, Power Rangers and Turtles are not so far apart. They're... Kung Fu Masters are mostly differentiated by the color of their uniforms.
Yep. I wonder if that means that the Ninja Turtles are going to get, like, the vehicles and all that stuff. Yeah, there's
Turtle Zords.
Yep. All right. But we should break from the Turtles, and Nick, you should tell us about what your pick is.
I mean, I feel like I talk about the X-Books just ad nauseum at this point.
Well, it's interesting to know that the momentum has maintained and that the books have not dropped off in your esteem.
And I will say 5 of them hit this week, which is a lot. I liked every single one of them.
Wow.
However, I want to
talk about... still feel of a piece? Like, that they are strongly shared continuity?
I want to briefly mention the one that actually is a new number one this week, which is Giant Size X-Men, number one.
Is that, in fact, a one-shot?
Yes, it's a series of one-shots focusing on various characters.
Okay.
And the first one is Jean Grey and Emma Frost. It is really a showcase for Russell Dauterman's art, which is beautiful to look at.
Russell Dauterman, who did Thor when Jane Foster was Thor?
But honestly, the X-Book this week that hit me the most was X-Men number 7, which I will jokingly refer to, this is the Midsommar of X-Men books.
How so?
Because this is all dealing with, like, a new culture, their religion, and something called the Crucible, which Jonathan Hickman tweeted out an image of Cyclops saying, now is the time for a Crucible, which it's sort of referenced obliquely at the beginning, and... as Cyclops is sort of trying to come to terms with what it means for the X-Men and the mutants as a whole.
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah, it's pretty much like, are you ready for this? And he talks with Wolverine, and Wolverine is like, well, you need to see a priest about some of this.
Now, is this before they've explained what it is, or they're talking around it?
Yeah, you need to talk
to a priest.
It's very
sneaky.
And so Cyclops goes and talks to Nightcrawler.
Yep.
And the conversation that Nightcrawler and Scott have about religion and sort of in dealing with basically they can't die and what does that mean?
Right.
What does Kurt think that means for their souls? Are they real? Do their souls like disappear once they died and they're just husks?
Does he think everybody is Jesus?
No. But then there's the Crucible, which is interesting.
So is it defined in this issue?
Yes.
Okay.
The Crucible is definitely defined in this issue.
What is it?
I don't want to delve too much into it, but it deals with the mutants that were turned human by Scarlet Witch.
Oh, way back when.
Yeah. So
weird, there's like a continuity deep
this
dive.
Is a continuity kind of flashback, and let me just say that Scarlet Witch is not looked well upon by the mutants as a whole.
I'm still mad at Bendis for that. I love Scarlet Witch as a character, and I hate that he has tainted her in that same way Hal Jordan becoming Parallax was.
Yeah. Yep.
At least that did eventually come off, wash off of Hal.
Fortunately, this is not washing off of Scarlet Witch.
Well, let's assume they're sticking with it, but you like where they have taken it.
I thought it was an interesting idea. It is,
you know,
dark.
I remember, by the way, Blob was one of those people. He went from being a mutant fat man to just a fat man.
Yes. yeah, it was, and it was weird. I remember, like, they dealt with some of that in, like, that Mutant Town stuff with Bishop, and... it's interesting because we are getting a look at the X-Men's religion, which is something I wasn't expecting, but...
Can I ask, does Nightcrawler, like... Because I don't actually know, like, how Cyclops was raised or what his beliefs are. Does he, like, say what his beliefs are?
A little bit.
Or, I was raised this, but I became this, or whatever.
He doesn't quite come out and say, like, he's agnostic or anything like that, but he is having a crisis of faith.
Interesting.
And I will also say a big players in this are the Guthrie clan, which...
Who we got? Paige, we got Sam.
Melody.
I don't even know who that is.
It's Melody, Paige, Sam, and Joshua, which are all Guthries.
A lot of them Guthries.
Parents got busy in that coal mine in town, I guess.
It's true.
Not much to do.
It's like a
John Mellencamp song or something.
They play a really big part, and Lionel Francis Yu gets this sort of... I like the architecture and sort of things he's building for Krakoa, like the buildings and the sort of landscapes, and it's just interesting.
That sounds pretty interesting. I might have to give this a look. I can't get on board Generation Krakoa.
Right.
But when I peek in and read stuff, I often find things that I'm like, oh, I admire that they pushed these things forward. You know, it reminds me of like when I was reading Morrison's run, and he would, like, talk about how kind of mutants, though they were still, sort of hated and feared, had also become kind of a hipster thing wherein, you know, kids were wearing mutant shirts and stuff like that, and there was a little bit of wannabe mutantism. And I was like, oh, that's a good forward momentum to it. Well, this is, like, filled with those kind of things.
Nah.
And like I said, I can't get fully on board the whole thing, but there's lots to like, so I'm probably going to read that issue and just see what's what.
I also say that in the X-Books this week, Hickman is definitely pushing the whole Cyclops, Wolverine, Emma, and Jean...
Menage a whatever?
Yeah, relationship. they're all, trading kisses and sort
of... Whoa, so this is pretty big. Is that they were actually going to, like... All the speculation that they were either, like, poly or...
But here's the important question. Is Cyclops kissing Wolverine?
There is a joke of Scott in a Speedo, and Logan is like, huh, who could say no to that?
Whoa. All right. For you, Marvel.
Listen, if they go there, I will go back and read all of these books because I will be like, y'all took a freaking chance.
I think it's cool.
Honestly, X-Men...
I'm tired of the love triangle.
I don't think they're going to do that.
A love quadrangle is much better.
Well, but I don't think there's any animosity towards anybody. They all are sort of... together, they're
if
not
they can
like...
go and have a polycule and be happy, then I think that would be a legitimately forward-thinking X-Men story.
Yeah, I'd be love to see it. I don't see it happening, and if it does, I don't see it sticking.
Right.
Yeah, it's Hickman. I mean,
we'll see. Right, we'll see if like Morrison, like if sort of when this initiative winds down or kind of gets handed off
to
new hands,
lazy triad again.
Yeah.
Not a lazy triad.
the other books that came out this week that are on my stack. Second issue of X-Men Fantastic Four,
mm-hmm.
The eighth issue of X-Force, which is a Domino and Colossus team-up, which
like
I really like their...
Does
kind
the fastball special hurt at any point?
No, but they had a relationship. I think it was during X-Force...
It was.
I forget what iteration of it.
Dennis Hopeless? Maybe?
Yeah, it was the Dennis Hopeless, and I actually thought that relationship was interesting.
Domino and Colossus? I can kind of see that.
I just judge all Colossus appearances by whether or not he throws someone.
no, but he does do a lot of Colossus-like things in it, and I thought it was really cool.
That's good.
They had a fastball special, but it wasn't a thrown thing.
Oh. So they're still together.
New Mutants number 8, which is the basically Hickman and Ed Brisson are sort of trading off different stories. This is an Ed Brisson one. Focusing on Magma. Is it Magma? Yeah.
Magma.
And her sort of returning to her home of...
Nova Roma.
Nova Roma.
Nova Roma. Thank you.
It's funny. One of us has the comic in front of us.
I know.
It's not the two people who said the name.
That was a classic cheesy New X or like New Mutants story, and yet it created the like a another bit of geography and a world building like by that I like.
They revisit Nova Roma, and it is what it was.
Yeah, is there still a hidden Roman civilization in what, South America?
South America. Yep, South America.
So this brings up a slight digression.
Yes.
The nerd cred of knowing Nova Roma. Off the top of our heads.
Yes.
I was watching Nailed It, the Netflix baking show where amateur bakers try to duplicate... It's funny. It's
try to duplicate what?
Like, in this particular one, it was Marvel Cupcakes.
Okay.
And so my son's a big fan, so he wanted to watch an episode, and I was like, oh, it's a Marvel episode. So I turned it on, and they did a thing where, like, there's three bakers. They're all amateur bakers. None of them are skilled enough to do this.
Uh-huh.
And they're trying to recreate this, like, Black Panther cake. And at one point, to like give an advantage to the person who was down, they stopped the other people, and Felicia Day, who's the guest host, asks them Marvel trivia questions for like 3 minutes, and so they're answering it, and they ask this like really hard question, and I was like, that's not fair, and then they give a multiple choice, and I'm like, oh, that's easy, but I am ashamed to say that I missed one, and I want to know where you guys are at.
Okay.
So, Black Panther's first appearance, was it in 1966 or 1967?
I would just be guessing. I think it's 67.
Yeah. That's what I guess too.
Huh?
It is 66.
Huh.
And I'm like, that's not the kind of trivia we know. Like, we know the years and dates.
Issue
and
numbers
stuff.
And years and dates, not so great.
No.
Storylines and things like that, I'm pretty good at. And I do remember some of the big issues that I read.
Sure.
But, like, I don't know, like the kind of things that people think of for trivia contests, first appearances of certain characters.
Yeah.
Unless they're, like, some character I care about, I mostly don't know.
I tend not to know that stuff either. But anyway.
That's for dumb geniuses.
I can tell you from this infographic, Nova Roma is a population of 50,000 people and is roughly the size of 21 square kilometers.
That sounds like a lot. That sounds like way bigger than I thought Nova Roma was.
I think I probably usually thought of it having, like, a few thousand. Yeah. it has enough that I think there's like a Senate and all the enough to have like, you know, interpoliticking and bickering and all that.
Yeah, it's like a lost Roman colony or something, right?
Yeah. 50K seems a bit large, but is it like kind of like, I don't even know what hit it. Was it like, you know, volcanic, you know,
volcanics, magma volcanic, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like there's some weird history involving Selene being
Selene
like
was the goddess who like ruled it.
Yeah.
And she's the one who hit it, I think.
Yeah, to be like a psychic illusion created by Selene, but it is an actual place. Blah,
yeah,
they didn't want to.
Yep. They did retcon at some point it being psychic illusion, which I'm glad they unretcon because that was dumb. It makes the Marvel Universe less magical.
Yep.
Don't tell me the Savage Land is a hallucination either.
I wanna run an RPG where you go to Nova Roma.
Sure.
That'd be fun.
That'd be cool.
A couple of other books. Suicide Squad number 3.
We finally get to the sort of the twist in this one, and it took too long, but I like it.
Taylor, you've got me. I like this new team of characters you've introduced.
I was unhappy with some of the stuff in number 1, and the number 2 was like, oh, it's a little bit better. And number 3, it's like, oh, this was all kind of a fake out for a setup.
Yep.
And it seems like maybe that was a bad choice, but I actually like where they're going with it now.
And then Ant-Man number 2, which sees Scott team up with the Swarm.
Team up reluctantly. There is a hilarious running gag.
No, totally they team up.
There's a hilarious running gag where the Nazi made of bees is like, thank you for joining me. And he's like, you're a Nazi. I am not on your side.
But yeah, it was a fun issue.
It was fun.
I like the idea. Yeah. That is all. What do you got, Dave?
Just as far as backup stuff.
Yep.
So I haven't read all of these, but I'll mention them. Y'all can shout if you've read them. DC has a new Amethyst comic, The Princess of Gemworld. Basically, their fantasy series.
It's part of their Wonder Comics line.
Yeah, she's spinning out of, what was it? She was in Young Justice, Bendis' book.
Yep.
There's a new book from Vault Comics called Finger Guns, in which case, you know, when you, like, pachow, point a finger gun at somebody.
Uh-huh.
I believe the deal is that they actually cause, like, emotional changes or something in the people somehow.
It's also very pretty.
Yes. Oh, yeah, the art is super boss. I like the latest issue of Star Wars, in which they return to Cloud City for some unfinished business.
For a heist, kind of.
Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on. There's also kind of a neat idea about, like, a Star Destroyer that got, like, partially wrecked when the Death Star blew up.
Yeah.
And that's been, like, been put together with people who, peopled by officers and staff that all, like, lost somebody on the Death Star.
Yeah.
So it's like the Vengeance Star Destroyer.
Yeah. It's cool.
It's a fun idea.
Also Lobot.
And also Lobot is in it. Lando
references the Charles Soule stuff. That makes sense, Charles Soule writing. Because he did that miniseries where he, like, revealed the two of them were, like, good friends. Yeah.
Essentially, he's going back to for his buddy Lobot, but, like, Luke has a mission there, and Leia does
too.
And because it's Star Wars, you get a bad feeling about this, and things go wrong.
Yep.
Let's see. There's a new Fantastic Four miniseries called Fantastic Four Grim Noir.
Is that a one-shot or a series? I wasn't sure.
Oh, let's see.
I think it might just be a one-shot.
Oh, yeah, it's a one-shot. That's Grim as in Ben Grimm. And, you know, he's got the classic look with the hat, or the fedora and the trench coat. Yeah. And literally they put him in a sort of noir kind of mystery.
I will say it's got really nice artwork by Ron Garney, and features a villain that I remember from my first delve into the Ohotmus.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of fun.
I was loving those guys turn up. I've got Falcon and Winter Soldier number one, which is obviously they're trying to get ahead of the series on Disney Plus. It's fun. They're definitely playing up the what was introduced in Civil War, where Sam and Bucky do not really love each other that much. Like, they kind of hate each other, which makes for a fun sort of buddy comedy thing. And they're dealing with sort of this government agency that's been taking out terrorist threats, and suddenly they get 3 days of the Condor, and they're trying to investigate that. Forceworks 2020. If you had told me I was going to enjoy a book called Forceworks at any point, I would have thought you were a liar.
By the way, that is based on... This is a Marvel book, yep. And Forceworks was a crazy 90s comic.
It was a terrible 90s book that basically replaced West Coast Avengers.
Did it have the same lineup? I was trying to remember.
Some of the same characters.
Because wasn't Thunderstrike in there?
Thunderstrike was in there. U.S. Agent was in there. I'm pretty sure War Machine and what Mockingbird were. But this, as you can see from the cover, it's U.S. Agent, War Machine, Quake, and Mockingbird. And basically, Forceworks is like a S.H.I.E.L.D. special. I don't know if it's actually S.H.I.E.L.D. or if it's somebody else, but it seems to be sort of I think it's a U.S. government operation. So it opens with an operation in New Jersey against the AI threat that 2020 is all about.
Yeah. Yep.
With Solo and Gauntlet going in with Force Machine to take them out.
Solo, is he the guy who wrecks terrorists?
Yes.
Yeah.
While all terrors lives, I die, or something like
that. Is he still in his green outfit?
He is. Oh. He still teleports. So that's just the opening. That's just like a little opening James Bondian thing. And then they go on to the island of Lingaris, which I'm pretty sure is made up. or I'm bad at geography, which is also possible. But
if you are from the island of Lingaris, do send us an email.
Yeah, just an email that says, I am from the island of Lingaris. And Russell, I know you're not from the island of Lingaris.
I don't know that.
There's a fun little throwdown. They do some fun bits with U.S. Agent being the jerky Captain America. Their version of Quake is good, and of course Mockingbird, one of my favorite characters, shows up and is well done. I like this little team book, and I'm going to follow the rest of that miniseries. Hidden Society is a new book from Dark Horse, which is about different magicians coming together against the threat, including a kid who's a street magician who finds out that he actually can do real magic.
This is in modern times?
Yeah.
Okay.
A blind girl who has, like, a demon who she summons, who's, like, this cigar-smoking, goat-looking demon, and then what looks like some kind of magical assassin. And they're all recruited by this typical sort of long-bearded, turban-wearing wizard.
Shazam.
Yeah, Wizard Shazam for some kind of secret society thing.
I thought it was good, and it features Raphael Albuquerque artwork.
It's really
and
nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Second issue of Daily Bugle, which has actually been a really fun story. It reminds me of nobody remembers this book. Remember Deadline?
Mm-hmm.
That Bill Roseman wrote? Like, it reminds me of that. It was just kind of fun.
Man, I'd almost forgotten that one.
That one a little bit of a supernatural element. This is just some Spidey imposter may have murdered someone.
Who was the character in Deadline?
Oh, I don't remember at all. Something. Okay. Cat something, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Punisher Soviet number 4, which continues to be a really good little Punisher run. And Usagi Color Out Classics number 2, which is a really good recolored version of an early Usagi story. That's everything for us this week. We don't have any topics. We're trying to
keep it lean and mean.
Yes. And I'm sure we'll get back to Movie Challenge at some point. It's closing in. We got like a few more days.
Yep.
So that is it for us for February. Hope you all enjoyed it. We'll be back next month and also next week. And until that time,
Yo Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.